Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. It's been about 3 weeks since state and federal officials began asking people to please stay indoors, or if you must venture out, stay at least 6 feet away from people outside your immediate household. The city's public safety department finds people are not exactly heeding these orders. Here to talk about why it's so vital is Chris Tonieri. He's the public information officer representing Pittsburgh Fire, Police, EMS, and more. Chris, thanks so much for making time.
Thanks for having me.
So remind us, people can go outside, but there are some new norms around it. What's the guidance as of right now?
As of right now, we took a couple steps, the city and public safety with Public Works. Basketball rims were removed from parks to discourage people from playing basketball. In addition, the overlook at Mount Washington was closed because that's a small area, which is very popular, and so it's difficult to observe social distancing. And in addition, Public Works has for several days now been using caution tape to sort of rope off playground equipment. With signage explaining that, you know, to prevent the spread of COVID-19, playground equipment is temporarily closed.
And the parks themselves, they are technically open, right?
Yeah, at this point, there is no plan to close the parks. However, we are exploring signage in the parks to remind people about best practices, including, you know, the social distancing is obviously very important, but also not to touch high contact surfaces. Not to use the equipment, even sitting on park benches, for example. So we are exploring signage right now. And in addition, park rangers and police will be patrolling parks a little more closely than they have in the past, just so that they can provide reminders to people to observe social distancing, which we felt was necessary because, for the most part, Pittsburgh has been doing a really good job of social distancing and as well as staying at home. But I think over the weekend, park rangers and police who were in the parks did notice a sort of collective step back. My guess is that, you know, it was warm and this has been going on for over 2 weeks and people wanted to get out and they did. But the problem was that people were not observing social distancing. So this is just a reminder of why that is such an important part of this fight against COVID-19.
Beautiful weekends in Pittsburgh are tempting for all of us, I'm sure. Is it that people are still picnicking or holding big gatherings, or is it just that tons of people kind of flocked into the same place as city parks?
If there was a basketball court anywhere, there were a lot of people playing basketball together. And contact sports or close contact sports, like basketball, like soccer, you shouldn't be doing that right now. It's impossible to social distance. To properly social distance when you're playing basketball. You know, you are coming into contact with people. So we also got a lot of reports of the trails, particularly in Frick and in Schenley. They were packed. People were taking advantage of the good weather and everyone was out. And that makes it difficult to social distance as well.
You mentioned Schenley and Frick and the overlooks on Mount Washington. Are there any other hotspots that your officers are seeing that you're really concerned where people are maybe congregating a little more than they should?
You know, we have three rivers. We have great trails on the rivers. So obviously people are taking to the trails along the rivers as well. The point is obviously a gathering point. But really, it's really the city parks and soccer fields. And basketball courts were really, if you were out this weekend, pretty much every basketball court was being used.
So what are officers doing right now when they see people not abiding by the rules? What enforcement or engagement tactics are they comfortable taking?
You know, we're not even looking at it as enforcement. We know Pittsburghers are smart. We just think that people need a reminder. This is not about issuing citations or anything along that. We don't believe that will ever become necessary. This is just, we were doing a good job for about 2 weeks, and then warm weather came in over the weekend and we noticed an uptick. So we just thought we would get ahead of this now and issue a public reminder. And that's what it is. It's a reminder. It's not a warning. It's not a, we're about to cite you. It's just a, hey, this is very important. Social distancing is a very important component in the fight against COVID-19. And it's also important to point out that if you're healthy enough to play basketball or be on playground equipment in a park, there's a good chance that if you were to contract this virus, you might have no noticeable symptoms. It might not impact you in any way, but if you're carrying it, then you can unknowingly transport it to people who are way more vulnerable. So it's just a reminder that at this time, these, you know, we all have to make personal sacrifices to benefit everyone in the long run.
And how would you say that Pittsburgh's officers are doing? I understand some are in isolation already due to potential exposure. Now there's a new command order out offering guidance on how officers themselves can avoid each other during the course of their normal work days. How are they and are you doing right now, patrolling and taking care of the city?
You know, I think for everyone, this has been a massive adjustment, and public safety is no different. I will say, Public Safety Director Wendell Hisrick, back in January, made sure that every police officer, every first responder was equipped with proper PPE, which includes hand sanitizer, gloves, masks, and protective eyewear. And they started training. So there are strict protocols in place for how first responders are going to act when there's a suspected case of COVID-19. And to this point, officers have done a great job of following the training and following the protocols. In terms of, how people are doing, I think like everyone, this is a difficult time. This is stressful. There's anxiety. There's uncertainty. So for everyone, it's difficult. And first responders are no differently, but that's not going to stop them. They're out there every day. And I think that's an important message, especially at this time, is that while a lot of the world has shut down, first responders are out there still every day, and they're going to continue to be.
Have any of our first responders as of right now tested positive?
No.
Is there a plan in place and just in case one of those first responders does? Looking ahead, New York City, of course, having a much tougher time with this than a city like Pittsburgh. But I think they've had 500 police officers test positive, about 20% of their EMS services. What's the status of the plan if something like that were to occur in Pittsburgh?
Well, obviously, we're hoping that it doesn't happen. There are plans in place. I can't speak for the director. I'm not quite sure how much of the plan is publicly available right now, but I can look into that. We're prepared. We have been preparing since January, and that's a lot of credit goes to Public Safety Director Wendell Hisrick, who long before this was making headlines in America, had started convening regular meetings to prepare for this.
And Chris, any final thoughts?
One other thing in terms of social distancing. At this time, public safety cannot accept food donations. We know Pittsburghers want to help, and we saw this after Tree of Life. The donations of food, especially to Zone 4 in Squirrel Hill, people just want to help, and they often do so by bringing food. And we appreciate the sentiment, but because of the health risks involved, we simply cannot accept any food donations right now. So if you do want to help, donate to your local food pantry, or consider donating blood to your local blood bank. But we do have to put in a reminder, because we're getting donations from various places, and the sentiment is definitely appreciated. But just for the health reasons, we can't accept them right now.
Understood. Chris Tanieri is a spokesperson for the Pittsburgh Public Safety Department. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Every day, Allegheny County releases trickles of information about new cases of COVID-19 in our area. They don't tell us where these patients live or who they are, but first responders say they need that intel before entering homes if someone calls 911. Joining us is WESA's Ariel Worthy with news of a sort of compromise. Ariel, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a collaboration between the County Health Department and Emergency Services. It's resulted in a map for dispatchers that'll be updated every day to show where these active COVID-19 cases are. How does that information then get to first responders?
So on a daily basis, the health department will basically enter the addresses of COVID-19 victims, but it's not putting their names. And so then a flag is entered into the 911 system. So if a call comes in from an impacted address, only then will a dispatcher relay that information to first responders.
What kinds of situations or calls, 911 calls, would this information be useful for?
So they actually did not specify what sort of situations or calls this would be useful for, but medical emergencies especially is one concern. There were even issues where police officers responded to a car accident and someone was displaying symptoms. So it's really kind of just like any emergency call that they will actually have to go out to.
And we should say police aren't refusing any 911 calls. They're just being a little more choosy about which ones warrant in-person attention. Is that correct?
Correct. So they're still actually going, having these face-to-face interactions, which is why it was such a concern. They aren't going on as many nonviolent calls. So for police in particular, I know like if there's like a theft or something, if someone took a box off your porch, they're going to just file a police report remotely for that. They're not going to go out to that. They even said like certain harassment calls, they will just file a police report remotely, but they will have officers following up. So it's not like they're just going to be like, well, here's a report and go about your business. They'll still have officers following up. But when it comes to animal control, you know, if there's a noise barking disturbance, they're not going to respond to those calls at all. So there are just certain things they're just really scaling back on.
Gotcha. So can anyone else access the map other than dispatchers who then tell first responders about it if needed?
No, it's just between the county and dispatchers. So it's not like every officer themselves are getting this information.
Okay, so what about the patients? Will there be a mark on their address in the 911 system forever? How long does this last?
So those flags will actually be removed after 30 days after they have tested positive.
Is that enough time? Do we know yet?
Not sure anymore. as of now, it should be. You know, at first it was 14 days or 2 weeks, but now after 30 days, they're thinking that people will be less contagious or they will show no symptoms and they should be recovering at that point.
So we've got this new system in place. What were first responders doing up to this point to try and protect themselves without knowing for sure whether someone had tested positive?
So they were actually operating under the assumption that any and every house could be impacted and taking precautionary measures if possible. So they were using their protective equipment basically on each call, which is what the complaint was from some union representatives, that makes them go through protective equipment quicker. Also, if someone displays symptoms, that means that officers or emergency responders would have to self-isolate. So that means that there's less people on the force, and it's already kind of a very trying time for these departments. So that was really their big concern, was just losing quantity of people and running through equipment quicker than usual.
Ariel Worthy is a reporter for 90.5 WESA. Ariel, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. The world may have hit pause, but science is still happening, and researchers need your help. As the Allegheny Front's Andy Kubis has learned, you don't need specialized background training or expertise. All you need is time.
Jeannie McHale has been self-isolating in her house in Pittsburgh with her husband, four kids, and a dog for 14 days now. There's baking to be done and some schoolwork. But there's also deciding whether that antelope-sized animal with stripes and a horn is a bushback or a yellow-backed duiker.
I think it looks like it.
Oh, yeah, he does kind of have that stripey thing down, doesn't he? And he's big.
He's definitely big.
Jeannie and 7-year-old Freda aren't playing some fun computer game. They are helping real scientists from Oxford and Yale classify data collected from cameras in Africa. It's called citizen science.
Okay. And what behaviors are we seeing?
I think it's like moving through the grass. Mm-hmm.
For this project, Wild Gabon, researchers are trying to figure out how important the edges of ecosystems are to a national park in the West African country. The project is housed on the website Zooniverse. It's the largest citizen science platform in the world. Projects are arranged by topic, from space to ecology to climate to medicine. There are nearly 100 to choose from.
Researchers truly would not be able to do this on their own.
This is Dr. Laura Trulli. She's president of citizen science at the Adler Planetarium in Chicago and co-leader for Zooniverse.
they have huge data sets, and those data sets are growing, like a million galaxies to tag or hundreds of thousands of tuberculosis samples to test against different antibiotics. Research teams tend to be relatively small, and with such large data sets, and if it relies on human eyes to detect some kind of pattern, crowdsourcing through an online platform is a real and unique and very useful solution.
Trulli says that since the coronavirus crisis began, they've seen a huge increase in participation. There's typically about 100,000 classifications a day across all the research projects worldwide, but last week, the participation rate shot up by more than a third. She thinks it's because more people are at home looking for ways to connect. Each project has a forum where the research team and volunteers can chat with each other about the science, unusual objects that they're seeing in the data, or just their lives.
It's been really heartwarming to see the role that citizen science can play right now in particular. I think we're all so keen to find ways to continue to engage and continue to have real impact.
We've definitely seen an uptick in citizen science since the quarantine has started.
This is Mark Cartwright. He's part of a research team from NYU and Ohio State University studying urban noise pollution. The project is called The Sounds of New York City. Citizen scientists are asked to listen to and then tag different city sounds. There's a list to choose from: jackhammer, siren, street noise.
What citizen science gives us is scale, and that's really what we need in order to train reliable models for detecting these sources of noise pollution.
It's a huge motivator, knowing that there's a public engaged with your research.
Again, Laura Trulli.
It keeps you energized and feeling like what you're doing really does matter and really does have appeal and really can be useful.
Do you see something special about this one?
A baby.
A baby! So we've got to put a green spot on it if it's a baby.
4-year-old Nina Schultz of Pittsburgh and her mom, Christy Gelling, are looking at photos of penguins collected by the research team behind Penguin Watch. It's one of the most popular citizen science projects with more than 8,000 volunteers.
How do we know it's a baby?
Because it's not black and white, it's gray.
Uh-huh.
And fluffy.
Yeah.
I thought it was just a rock, but it wasn't.
No. It's a baby penguin.
Yeah. And it's cute. Mm-hmm.
This really is open to everyone.
Tom Hart is the Oxford researcher behind Penguin Watch. He says that the citizen scientists are a vital part of his research, and kids are especially good at it.
I mean, it's deliberately intuitive, but they'll see some penguins, they'll learn about stuff, but mostly they're just really, really helping us.
He just has one warning: it's mildly addictive. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Andy Kubis.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. To learn more about how the spread of the new coronavirus is affecting our region, go to WESA's coronavirus blog. It's updated throughout the day at WESA.fm. The Confluence is also a podcast. Find us wherever you listen in. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Kevin Gavin, and Kylie Kaczynski. Until next time, I'm Megan Harris. Please be safe and have a good day of good news.